I'm David Liggett with Data Center Hawk, and I am really excited to be joined here in Dallas with Matt Pfeil. Matt is the CEO and founder of Crane Data Centers and well-known in the industry, but we're really glad you're here and excited to get to dive into some fun topics.
Thanks, Dave. Really appreciate you hosting me today.
Yeah, you bet. So, I know there are many in our industry that know you and know about your background, but for those that don't, kind of just talk about what you were doing before Crane and maybe how that maybe prepared you for the role that you're in now.
Yeah, no, thanks for the question. So I was at Google for 12 and a half years, early member of the network acquisition team, did that for a number of years. And then most of my time was actually spent on the data center acquisition team. So I led many of the land acquisitions that for Google self-built data centers in various geographies in the US, Latin America, and Asia as well. Also spent a lot of time on the leasing side, so leasing capacity from third-party data centers. And obviously that was basically a great education for what we're doing at Crane.
And so let's go back to that, like your time there and how maybe you were able to see things, or during that process you talked about it being in education, you know, what were some of the maybe high level concepts that made you go, hey, I want to go and help start this new company and with this new vision and thinking through how we'll build things in the future? Like, what were those things that led to that?
So part of it was educational, just from how does a hyperscaler like Google think about the world and the scale at which all these hyperscalers, Google among them, of course, operates at and has been operating for many years is just much bigger and much longer term than what I think the industry that we're in today has traditionally needed to think about, just because the numbers are so much larger. The demand is so much larger. The other thing is just the idea of innovation and being able to continually iterate, continually improve. There's a concept, it's not a Google concept, but a concept of Kaizen, which is continuous improvement over time. And that's absolutely something that Google is amazing at. And then, you know, this is maybe not unique to Google, but just being in the market, buying or leasing on behalf of a hyperscaler and seeing what the market's offering and some of the things, maybe more importantly, that it's not offering, I think is really, important and is an underpinning at Crane.
Yeah, and the not offering comment's really good, because I think that's led a lot of different individuals in our space to do new things, you know, kind of evaluating what's not out there, what could be, and then starting something differently. I want to go back. You mentioned the word scale, which in our space is a word we use a lot, but that word has really changed over, would say, the definition of how we think about it has changed over the last, you know, I would say like 10 years, but even the last 5 years. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, I know that plays into some of the work that you all are doing from a site selection perspective, from a what you're building, and how that's maybe been adjusted from, you know, 2017, 2018 to today.
That's right. Well, when I started Crane, the focus was obviously wanted to be able to help the hyperscalers, but the vision also was really, hey, there's a much larger set of customers that are taking, you know, 1 to 5 megawatts. Yeah. And at the time, those were great deals, right? And so over the last couple of years, really, demand, as you know, has gone through the roof.
Yeah.
And we're seeing in the market those customers that were taking sort of that 1 to 5, they've shifted up to be, you know, 5 to 10, five, in some cases going up to 20 megawatts, right? And which was sort of unheard of for that sort of what we, I'd say, is middle buyer profile, right?
Yeah.
A wholesale, wholesale or scale buyer. And then, of course, you know, the hyperscalers themselves continue to take down large chunks of capacity. But I would say that traditionally has been, and I'm sure you've heard this from others, you know, maybe 20 to 30 megawatts. Yep. Now that's shifted, you know, 40, 50, and to hundreds of megawatts.
Yeah.
So that's been a really interesting evolution in the market, and exciting to see that happen, of course.
Yeah, I think that's been a huge shift. It's one of the reasons that our, you know, we talk so much about challenges with power acquisition, and even like getting the real estate to support that today is even a challenge.
That's right.
The other thing I would say on your comment about the like smaller data center user, you know, even the smaller data center users have gotten bigger, but there are those groups that still need like the 2 to 4 megawatt, you know, requirements across the U.S. and obviously across the world. And I really think those are the groups that are going to have a continually challenging time. One, because any space that's come back to the market, like we'd call it churn space,
that's right,
you know, is being taken by users that are in those facilities anyway that want to grow.
Exactly.
And then the groups that traditionally had built for 2 to 4, 6 megawatt users now are chasing a lot of the larger demand out there. And that's so right. It's a really interesting time in our space for many reasons. I often say, like, I feel like the enterprise users, the forgotten about, you know, yeah, and I don't mean that negatively towards the industry. I just, it's really hard. You know, 4 years ago in Dallas, you could find 10 locations that would do that had 4 megawatts available. Now there's maybe 2.
Yeah.
If that.
Right. Right. So, no, absolutely. We're seeing the same
thing. It's a big change. Okay. So talk about, you know, one of the things, at least when I think about Crane and the conversations that we've had, the sustainability piece is a very big part, I think, of the offering
yes.
that you all have out there. Talk about your approach to that. I mean, right, I know there's right. different components to that, right. but what are the most important things to Crane when it comes to sustainability?
Yeah, so there's, I'd say there's a number of things that I'd highlight. One is it starts at the very beginning from a site selection perspective. So our first project that's outside of the Hillsboro markets in an area called Forest Grove, Oregon, we sited it next to a wastewater treatment plant. We could have gone to some of the other areas, Hillsboro included, but we really thought that was a resource that, you know, we could use recycled water to perform some of our cooling. And yep. so that obviously is not, we're not competing with the potable water system. It is, you know, a resource that the local wastewater treatment plant was looking to get users for. So it was really a nice synergy there and something that we like from the get-go from a sustainability perspective. The next aspect of site selection was because we sited in that specific location, we were able to work with a local municipal electric co-op. So they basically are owned by the community and they will allow our users to buy off of the wholesale power market.
Interesting.
And so unlike, you know, some of the other areas where you sort of take what you get, if a large user wants to buy, you know, a whole building worth of renewable energy, they can do that in that location. Now, again, this is very site specific and not all of our locations will have that characteristics, but those are the types of things we look for when we're doing site selection. And so I think that's the front end.
Yep.
The next phase is obviously construction. And so, you know, when you think about what these buildings, which are hundreds of thousands of square feet, what goes into them, some of the main parts are steel and concrete,
sure.
right? So it depends on, you know, if we're building or another company and one of our competitors is building, both of those resources are actually very carbon intensive. And mm-hmm. so, you know, one of the things that we're having conversations with, you know, some of the prefab and concrete suppliers about is, hey, how can we make your concrete, which really comes down to the Portland cement, how do we make that a more renewable, you know, input into the process? And so there's the good thing is there's a lot of companies that are trying to, they've identified, you know, concrete as being a problem and specifically Portland cement. And so we are going to be looking to adopt, you know, some of the more renewable aspects of, you know, the inputs. We haven't made any decisions
sure.
yet, so I don't have anything to announce you just yet. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity from the construction side. And then, you know, on the back end, you know, we have a big, you know, focus on making sure that on an ongoing basis, our facilities are, you know, sustainable. And so what that looks like is, you know, recycling water, you know, on site. So things like purple pipes in the buildings being LEED certified,
mm-hmm.
Making sure that, you know, obviously the PUE is as low as
sure.
it possibly can be. You know, we'll likely do some interesting things on the energy side too, but it's probably a little too early to announce those.
No, that makes sense. I mean, I think for our industry, at least in my experience, watching different groups, you know, figure out ways, you did a great job, I feel like, of kind of breaking down the process, kind of the like pre-construction, construction, and the operational side of mm-hmm. that and the opportunities that are
right.
in each one of those phases. I mean, now it seems like if you want to work with these users that need 5 to 20 to 200 megawatts, you have to have a focus in those areas and have to be working on ways to, you know, make the whole process more sustainable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the big challenges right now is that there is so much demand and everything's moving fairly quickly that, you know, a lot of times the industry doesn't have time to react to the demands of users. And so the good thing is that, you know, we have been thinking about this from day one.
Sure. Yeah. When you think about maybe the Crane offering, and this might be from a site selection and like what you're building today and what you're focused on in kind of the Portland Forest Grove area, and then maybe other sites you're thinking of down the road, how is that, how has that changed? Meaning like, hey, we went in and we thought it was this 50 megawatts, 100 megawatts is the size. Now we're looking for sites that are much larger. Like, have you seen just even an evolution since you all began? You know,
great
a couple
question.
Years ago.
Yeah, no, great question. So the Portland campus is, you know, 100+ megawatts, but you know, and we thought that was amazing, right? And this is, you know, we landed
a couple
this
years
site,
ago.
Yeah, back in 2021, and we've been working on it. But oh my gosh, over the last year, people are now talking, oh, well, we need 200, 300, you know, megawatts in one place. And so that has, I think, changed our lens on the next set of sites that we're going after and the things that we have in queue that we haven't announced yet.
Yep.
The demands have, you know, increased over time.
Sure.
Now, I would say all of this is, you know, site specific and obviously underpinned by the actual energy grid, right? A lot of the issues that we and our, you know, competitors are facing is really around getting transmission to the places that we're going to be building. And so I think that's the piece that we're trying to figure out. And but, you know, we're doing our best to use the resources we have in-house to find the right sites that can scale over time to those hundreds of megawatts.
And what I was talking to someone in the debt markets yesterday that was working on a data center project, and they were asking me, you know, what groups have the competitive advantages over others? And you know, I was really saying, like, it's really access to power, and it's being able to deliver the power when the people, you know, when the user is expecting the power to be delivered.
Right, right.
What are some of the things that you and others are doing to like get ahead of that? You know, is it, hey, we're adjusting the way we're looking at like substation building and expansion or funding? Is it that we're helping data center or power companies figure out transmission line easements? Like, what are some of the things that you can do to help that process go faster?
No, absolutely. And for us, I mean, I would love to say, well, we're going to be able to help these utilities, which are much, much larger organizations than we are. But I think what we try to do is we try to make their lives easier. And what we mean by that is we have an internal tool that we've developed that's basically a mapping GIS tool where we've overlaid the grid. And so we can, instead of going to a location where it's not proximate to the grid, we can first screen to say, okay, you know, do we have access to the transmission lines? Do we have access to the substations that, you know, have capacity today? And so it makes that, you know, conversation easier with those utilities. I think by and large, the utilities are challenged because of our industry.
Oh, 100%.
You know, just, and it's not just our industry. I think, you know, the electrification is a thing that's going to be happening over the next, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. And we're part of that, right? So that's one piece. You know, the other piece is that we have conversations with the utilities before we start spending a lot of time in any given market. And there are some areas that are just tapped out for a number of years. And so, you know, in our case, that just means, okay, well, we'll circle back when, you know, they're closer to bringing more transmission, more capacity online.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons we're paying attention to how, like, even within one market, like how the submarkets are moving.
Absolutely.
You know, and you actually, the example in Forest Grove is a really good example of that, where most of the growth in the Portland market has been in Hillsboro.
That's right.
But there's, you know, always different challenges with different areas. And so you're starting to see other areas like Forest Grove and other places emerge. In Dallas, it would be like what's happening in South Dallas.
Yep.
You know, in Phoenix, it would be like Goodyear and Glendale and Mesa. And I think those are the interesting parts of our space right now where the power companies are really trying to figure out, hey, how much power can we deliver to this geographic area given the current transmission line substations that we have? And and that's a really I'm always interested to hear of the things, you know, it's such a laborious task to deliver the type of power that we're talking about. So whatever can be done to speed up that process, I think is just so important.
Absolutely.
And so that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk just market interest overall. Obviously, you all have you're working in the Portland area. What are some other areas that are interesting to Crane as you think about like growth down the road?
Absolutely. So, you know, we're focused on just to set the table, we're focused on all the major data center markets in the U.S. So we want to be in these markets because that's where customers have indicated they want capacity. Yep. That's probably not surprising to you. So on the West Coast, you know, I think, you know, Silicon Valley is of high interest, but to your earlier statement, power is a huge issue there. So it'll be years before something like that would be able to come to life. But it is in our backyard and something that, you know, we believe that we have special insight into because of our location.
Yeah.
You know, another one is the greater Phoenix market. I think power challenges are very real in that market. And so we have some, you know, irons in the fire there. And I think that, you know, that'll be a market that we'll definitely be operating in the not so distant future. Moving, you know, sort of farther to the east, Dallas is a great market. Yeah, it's your home market. Yeah. So we'd love to be here, and we're spending time in this market. You know, farther north, Chicago, great market. Definitely seeing power constraints up there as well. So it's really about working and collaborating with the utility there, just like anywhere else. And then, you know, I think farther to the east, you know, Atlanta and Northern Virginia are target markets. We are looking at some, call it tier two, tier three markets on a market by market, opportunity by opportunity basis, but that's not our core focus.
Okay. So that's great. Yeah. It's been fascinating to watch, obviously, the growth of like Northern Virginia, Phoenix, Dallas, Chicago, Atlanta, Silicon Valley. I always say about Silicon Valley, it's like there's always demand there.
Yeah.
You know, the challenge is, can you find sites?
That's right.
Like, and then can you get substations built to serve it? But I always have said, like,
you like a challenge.
Dave. Yeah, there you go. Come on, man. Well, and I, you know, it's funny because over time, Silicon Valley, the market growth has actually been, you know, constrained by that, and other markets like a Dallas or Phoenix, where there's been, you know, a bigger runway has grown in ways that Silicon Valley just hasn't. But I think that's one of those markets that, you know, will continue to grow. But all that to say, I think the focus on some of those secondary areas like a Reno, Salt Lake City, Vegas, Columbus, Charlotte, Minneapolis, like those markets are certainly seeing more interest and I think conversations than they have before, because they can solve certain challenges that maybe some of the bigger markets can't. But that's then there's at times other things that come up with that. So, or issues that come with those markets. So let's, I just want to talk about kind of the future. And, you know, right now we're in, as I think about the market, it's like we're kind of in the cloud growth, you know, from like 2017 to 2021. I feel like now we're in this cloud and AI boom. Absolutely. What does the next, you know, 4 to 5 years look like in your perspective? And how does the market handle the continued, you know, growth that we're seeing?
Right. I mean, we're very bullish on ML AI as sort of an underpinning driver. Not to say we're not bullish on cloud, but that's sort of, I think, something that's, you know, it's here, it's real, people are using it. So we think that's here to stay, and it there's going to be more and more adoption of cloud. But ML AI is something that's not new, but it's new to the public sphere, right?
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until the last 12 months that I'd say most people even knew what that meant and how they could use it.
Yeah.
And so as people adopt that technology, the demand for what we are building is just going to increase, right?
Yeah.
And so right now it feels feverish, but the difference between, you know, some of, I guess, the underpinnings of maybe past demand and this is that there's real companies, real startups that are making a lot of money, you know, with these workloads, and people are using them to increase productivity, to come up with new inventions, new ideas, and really scale their businesses. So we're really bullish on that. That being said, it's a fundamentally different type of data center to serve these type of high density workloads. But that's been part of our playbook from day one, right? So that's something that is, for any hyperscaler, this is not new. But I would say in data centers that were built, you know, even as recent as 10 years ago, many of them were not designed to handle this type of workload.
Yeah, I was at a construction company a couple of weeks ago that does data center work, and they were talking about internally how it was interesting about how they were going through, you know, years and years of data that they had internally and basically building an AI product that would allow them to quickly search through that data to produce things that they do consistently in a much more organized fashion.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess the reason I bring that up, I think most people wouldn't expect construction companies to have that mindset,
right?
You know, to think like, hey, how can we use all this internal data that we have to make us faster and smarter? And so I thought, you know, I think when we're starting to see the maturity on the like machine learning AI at that level, I just think that, you know, the market is in a really interesting spot, especially as it relates to the growth and design of the data center. So obviously you mentioned just on the design side or maybe construction side, you mentioned like the higher densities.
Right.
So they'll
right.
obviously more to the cabinet. What else are some of like the design changes or is it, you know, single story, multi-story? Yep. Is it, you know, when you think about the campuses, is it like one big building? Are you seeing like 10, you know, individual buildings? What do you see as maybe some additional design changes or construction changes?
I mean, I think everyone has their own sort of design, whether it's a bigger building, single story, multi-story. That's not really some of the design that I'm thinking about. But to enable, you know, getting 50 kW, 75 kW, 100 kW per rack type of densities, when you get to some of those numbers, you either have to have a really, really amazing air cooling design,
but really
it's going to move to liquid cooling, right?
Sure.
So we're not seeing a lot of demand for immersion yet, but that may come down the line.
Yeah,
I think
sure.
we've been talking about this for probably 10 years. Is it ever going to be
sure.
the year where that's a thing?
Yes.
But we are seeing demand for the availability of water to the rack.
Okay.
And so, you know, and that's really depends on the customer, like what they're looking for.
So Matt, now that we've seen some of the industry changes related to size of requirements and different companies that are interested in like growing their infrastructure, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you all are looking to do to make sure you can accommodate that over time?
Yeah, no, great question. So when you think about, you know, the cost of building these buildings and, you know, depending on the design, depending on the customer requirements, let's call it $10 million per megawatt, right? That's a, you know, plus minus number that makes the math really easy. So a 40 to 50 megawatt building, you're talking about 400 to 500
money.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. $400 to $500 million of capital. And, you know, that might not move the needle at one of the hyperscalers, but for most of the people in our industry, that you need to raise equity and debt in very large volumes when you're getting to hundreds of megawatts of capacity. So one of the things that the approach that we've taken is we've separated our operating company from the property company. Yeah. And what that effectively means is that we don't grow our balance sheet to be able to say yes to a customer. So our first project in Portland is a really good example. So we basically working with in a JV manner with Principal Asset Management. They've been in the business for over 15 years, well-known name, really great people. They are our partner on that project, and hopefully they'll be our partner on future projects as well. But, you know, if for some reason, you know, we need to say yes to a customer that Principal can't work with, or you know, we have a landowner that, you know, has their own money and they want to get in the data center business, we can be a partner to those types of entities. And so we think that'll allow us to grow, to allow us to say yes to customers without being, you know, capital constrained like some of our competitors are.
Sure. And that's having that flexibility over time, I think, is going to pay off, because it's very clear that the end users are expecting, you know, the flexibility on how they're looking at some of these arrangements to be.
Absolutely.
So I think from an ownership side, to be able to provide that makes a lot of sense.
Absolutely. And we've even had conversations with some of these customers about, you know, either owning or, you know, basically taking a stake in the projects. And we can structure around that.
That's
so I think that's a differentiator for us.
Okay, so if people want to learn more about the company, it's cranedc.com.
That's right.
And they can connect with, you know, you and the team and
correct.
From there. Okay,
that's
well, thank
right.
you so much for being here. Really appreciate the time, and we look forward to watching Crane grow over the next few years.
Likewise. I really appreciate the time, Dave. Thanks so much.